Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Our thanks to Brian Main for that introduction. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Yesterday, we introduced to you an article that was found on a website titled Approaching Justice. Approaching Justice is described as an online magazine about religion, politics, philosophy, and culture. It's put together by a man by the name of Chris Hendrickson, who is a political philosopher and a practicing Mormon. He tells the story of a man by the name of Kirk Caudill, who was a Mormon studies scholar who has recently left the Mormon Church. And as we mentioned yesterday, we find that many people are leaving the Mormon Church, that's to be sure. But when we hear of an educator that leaves, that certainly does get our attention, just as it would get our attention of an ecclesiastical leader within the Mormon Church who would eventually leave. What caused problems for Mr. Caudill is he was having sessions with some of his students, and as we left you yesterday, he had made a comment regarding a piece of Mormon history that many Mormons believe to be fact. He said that it was not historical. And of course, that caught the attention of one of the students who was upset about that. That student complained. This led to a confrontation between Caudill and some of his superiors, which ultimately led to Mr. Caudill leaving the Mormon Church. We do want to bring your attention back to the story about Brigham Young, where it says in this article that there were 30 students who joined this particular session. During the discussion, Caudill mentioned that the account of Brigham Young being transfigured to appear like Joseph Smith is not, quote, entirely historical, end quote. That's what caused a student who was present to complain about what he had said. And this is what gets a lot of Mormon historians and educators in hot water, is when they go against the norm and start, I guess you could say, exposing some of Mormon history for the folklore that it really is. Mm. And there is a lot of folklore in Mormonism. But yet, Mormons will tell you they know it's true because they prayed about it. And of course, that raises all sorts of flags for us as Christians, because that's just not the way the Holy Spirit operates. MRM associate Sharon Lindblom wrote an excellent article about this whole issue of whether or not Brigham Young was actually transfigured after Joseph Smith's death. There was some competition as to who was going to be the next leader because Joseph Smith did not leave instructions for who would become the next prophet, seer, and revelator of the Mormon Church after his demise. He wasn't expecting to die at the age of 38. So this left the fledgling church in a huge dilemma.
And we're going to be covering it this show, but if you want to see that, you can go to our website and just type in Transfiguration Brigham. Those are the only two words you'd need. It'll be the first article that pops up. You'll be able to read the article that Sharon wrote.
Well, we know that Joseph Smith was killed at the end of June 27, 1844. And according to Sharon's research, she talks about a special meeting that was called in the town of Nauvoo on August 8, 1844. And this was supposed to decide who would become the next leader of the church.
She leads it off by saying Sidney Rigdon spoke and made a case for his ascension to the office of president. And then Brigham Young spoke in behalf of the 12.
You have to remember that Sidney Rigdon had been with this movement practically from the very beginning.
Right.
So he was a very powerful leader within the Mormon Church at this time. Unfortunately, Sidney Rigdon did have a way of shooting his mouth off when he shouldn't, and he would say things that got the Mormons in a lot of trouble. That's who we're talking about here, Sidney Rigdon and, of course, Brigham Young.
And then Brigham Young spoke in behalf of the 12. It was then that the miracle occurred. And what I'm going to quote right now comes from George Q. Cannon from 1864 that Richard Van Wagner quoted in his article from Dialogue, The Making of a Mormon Myth. This is what was written. If Joseph had risen from the dead and again spoken in their hearing, the effect could not have been more startling than it was to many present at that meeting. It was the voice of Joseph himself. And not only was it the voice of Joseph which was heard, but it seemed in the eyes of the people as if it were the very person of Joseph which stood before them. A more wonderful and miraculous event than was wrought that day in the presence of that congregation we never heard of. The Lord gave his people a testimony that left no room for doubt as to who was the man chosen to lead them. They both saw and heard with their natural eyes and ears, and the words which were uttered came, accompanied by the convincing power of God, to their hearts, and they were filled with the Spirit and with great joy. There had been gloom, and in some hearts, probably, doubt and uncertainty, but now it was plain to all that here was a man upon whom the Lord had bestowed the necessary authority to act in their midst in Joseph's stead. On that occasion, Brigham Young seemed to be transformed, and a change such as that we have read of in the Scriptures as happening to the prophet Elisha, when Elijah was translated in his presence, seemed to have taken place with him. The mantle of the prophet Joseph had been left for Brigham. The people said one to another, "The spirit of Joseph rests on Brigham." They knew that he was the man chosen to lead them, and they honored him accordingly.
Now remember, this is the story that Kirk Caudle, this Mormon scholar, said was not entirely accurate. There is a lot of controversy that is associated with this particular story. Now, you have to understand that Brigham Young was not sustained as the president of the church until December of 1847. So that alone makes you wonder what's going on here, because if that was really what took place, if God had practically intervened and transfigured Brigham Young in such a manner, why did they wait so long? Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair question.
Sure it is.
We also know from history that Brigham Young's ascension to the throne was not without opposition or even arguments, as Sharon points out in her piece. The historical facts, she says, actually suggest that Brigham Young was not chosen to lead the church that day, for 1 week later, on August 15th, the 12, this would be the Council of the 12, published an epistle. And what did that epistle actually say?
"You are now without a prophet present with you in the flesh to guide you. Let no man presume for a moment that Joseph Smith's place will be filled by another. For remember, he stands in his own place and always will."
Now, this was published in the Times and Seasons. It was a Mormon periodical. It came out on the 15th of August, 1844. Van Wagner quotes this. He cites it on page 14 in his dialogue article. But according to Mr. Van Wagner, he says that no known contemporary record supports a supernatural occurrence at either the morning or afternoon August 8th meetings. But there are plenty of accounts from later years that mention Brigham Young's transfiguration. It's interesting. That's how legends are born. Yep. They don't happen at the time. They have a few years that linger on. And it's amazing, though, legend in Mormonism can happen rather quickly. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that seem a little bit odd? Because you have no record of anybody talking about this, then someone mentions it, and all of a sudden everybody knows about it. That's the way it happened with the alleged statement by Brigham Young saying that the Salt Lake Valley was supposed to be, "This is the place." It's the same story that we hear with the seagulls eating the crickets that came to devour the crops. But what does Van Wagner talk about on that particular topic?
He says the earliest detailed accounts of a purported transfiguration did not begin to surface until long after the saints were settled in the Great Basin. The fact that no account was included in Joseph Smith's history, completed in August 1856, or in the autobiography of Parley P. Pratt, completed just before his 1857 death, suggests that the myth was not fully developed by this period. The first public reference to a transfiguration may have been to a July 19, 1857 statement by Albert Carrington before a huge gathering of saints that he could not tell Brigham Young from Joseph Smith when Young was speaking in the stand in Nauvoo during the August 8, 1844 convocation.
Well, Sharon goes on to say that some who later claimed to have witnessed the transfiguration were not actually in Nauvoo on August 8, 1844.
Oops.
Yeah, that's a big oops. She mentions how John D. Lee said he saw and heard a strong resemblance in Brigham Young to Joseph Smith at that time, but he did not arrive in Nauvoo until August 20th.
So he couldn't have been there, so how did he know?
And, of course, John D. Lee is the one who was the scapegoat for the Mountain Meadows Massacre in 1857. But Sharon goes on to say that in 1869, Orson Hyde, an apostle of the Mormon Church, described the famous August 8th meeting and his participation in it.
"We went among the congregation. He," talking about Brigham, "spoke, and his words went through me like electricity. This is my testimony. It was not only the voice of Joseph, but there were the features, the gestures, and even the stature of Joseph before us in the person of Brigham."
And that can be found in the Journal of Discourses, Volume 13, page 181. Now, what's interesting about Orson Hyde's testimony is that Orson Hyde was not in Nauvoo on August 8th either. He didn't arrive in the city until 5 days after this meeting took place. So how did he have those kind of details when he wasn't even there?
I like Sharon's word that she said, "Mr. Hyde's testimony is astonishing."
It is astonishing. She goes on to say, "One contemporary account of the transfiguration of Brigham Young was found in the diary of a Mormon by the name of George Laub, L-A-U-B, and it was thought to have been written in 1846. Mr. Van Wagner, though, in his article says, "The small tan-colored leather diary, which has misled many scholars, has now been determined to be a copy of the original by Laub himself with additions."
It goes on, Sharon writes, "The original diary has also been discovered, and it contains no reference to Brigham Young's transfiguration."
So Mr. Van Wagner sums it all up this way. He says, "Apostles Brigham Young, Heber C. Kimball, Willard Richards, and Wilford Woodruff, all of whom made 8th of August, 1844 entries in their diaries, make no reference to an epiphany. Such an event, had it truly transpired, would have stood at the apogee of world history, a physical metamorphosis unsurpassed except for the transfiguration and resurrection of Jesus Christ, yet neither the Times and Seasons nor the Nauvoo Neighbor," another Mormon periodical, local newspapers owned by the church, "mention such a wonder. Neither do the 1844 and 1845 accounts of Jedediah Grant and Orson Hyde, specifically written to refute Sidney Rigdon's robust challenge to the Quorum of the Twelve's succession chain." In other words, this portion of Mormon history is really nothing more than folklore. So I would have to say that on this issue, Mormon scholar Kirk Cottle was absolutely correct.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you considered visiting the Holy Land? Well, in February 2015, Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson are hosting a trip to Israel with the option to visit the seven churches of Revelation in Turkey. During our 11-day trip to Israel, former Utah pastor Joel Kramer will take us on a day to see important biblical sites where very few people go. We'll also have a chance to swim in the Dead Sea, get baptized in the Jordan River, and hike through Hezekiah's Tunnel. To find out more, visit MRM.org and click on the Israel icon on the top right-hand corner of the page. Again, that's MRM.org.